And good evening, everybody, and welcome to tnsradio.ning.com. The time apparently is 21:04, and the date apparently is 28th of the 8th, 2011. And welcome, one and all. And topic of conversation for tonight: gonna shoot the breeze, hopefully, on some some viewpoints that you may find interesting. I have online with me at the moment. Wonderful man, we know him as Mr. T, and as I've said many times before, I consider Mr. T my mentor, but he may not consider me his student. Mr. T, can you hear me loud and clear? Okay. He's rooting for papers there in the background. I'll give him a minute, so he can hear me anyway. Oh, you're flipping through your documents.
I hear myself echoing.
Oh, you're getting an echo. Hold on. That should be better now. Is that okay now?
Yeah, it seems to be. Yeah, great.
Okay.
Full moon. Fish and a spoon.
Hey, don't get me started on spoons. You know what I do.
Yeah, well, we can't do too much ripping it up here. The audience will think that we're a bunch of nuts.
Yeah, that's allowed. That's allowed. So listen, before we get to our topics, I just want to say my reports that I received from the Fela down in Cove. Apparently it was a great success. Harry gave me a call. He was down there, Harry from WeThePeople.ie, and he said fantastic setup, that the whole thing was very professional, and a big crowd showed up and he did a talk. So he's very happy with the whole thing. I know there's other groups down there. Apparently it's been a raging success, and best of luck to guys. Very sorry I couldn't get there, fellas. Just simply a transport issue, and you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. So Mr. T, we had a meet up today, as we always do in Ardgill and Castle, usually 3 p.m. on Sunday afternoon, and today I brought up a little book, and it's a little book. And it's entitled Glanville Williams, Learning the Law. And this is the 13th edition. And I just want to give out the ISBN number for you all, if that's okay. The ISBN number 0421-92-55-0-7. So that's 0421-92-55-0-7. Now... I absolutely love this little book. It's only a small little book, but the information in it, and the, you know, if you read it with a discerning mind, I thought it's a wonderful book. And Mr. T, you said you've read this one, or you have a different version of it. Is that right?
Mr. T has read the 5th edition, and I think this one here is the 11th edition. Now, isn't that remarkable?
I'm on the... No, this one I have is the 13th edition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you have the 11th.
Very similar.
Yeah.
That one hasn't been watered down yet.
Right. This one is watered down, I think.
Not that much.
Right. But chapter one, the minute I opened it, chapter one, the divisions of the law. And there's an interesting quote there. But in these nice, sharp quillets of the law, good faith, I am no wiser than a daw. That's King Henry VI, Shakespeare. No wiser than a daw. I have no idea what a daw was in those days. Do you know what he meant by that?
It's called, no, I certainly don't. I hadn't been following that. Means that he's got jurisdiction, apparently. He's a king, right?
Yep.
Or the lord.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He must have it. That's all I can say. Because I, you know, I just can't get my, reading or, my study around that one right now.
Mm-hmm.
I must excuse myself from that question.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. I'll just read a little from this, folks. The first chapter. This little book aims to help principally those who have decided to study law. whether in a university or college or as a professional qualification. I would add a little caveat to that, just because you really probably should.
Proceedings are commenced by, and the defense is called an answer.
From time to time, I have been told of some who have read the book before making the decision and have been sufficiently attracted by the taste it has given them of legal studies to make up their minds to continue. I did not, however, intend to proselytize when I wrote. As you will see if you look at chapter 13, there are quite enough people trying to enter the legal profession without adding to the number. If you are uncertain about your career, there may be strong personal and social reasons why you should take up something else. So he's not exactly encouraging people to do it.
It's quite a science, isn't that art. It keeps society intact, you know, in a, I guess that's what we have to do, is keep society in check.
Mm-hmm.
So they get all this legislation out there and these civil laws and equity laws to cover the check so we don't get out of bounds with one another.
Mm-hmm. Somebody just asked me.
Interesting about the civil.
Sorry, somebody just asked me, T, when was this first published? The first edition was in 1945, I think. That sound about right to you?
Yes, I think it's in mine here. That was roughly at 43, 45.
Okay, well, there you go.
1939. Yeah, the law reform. Okay. Yeah, I got 1943 here.
Okay.
You're close. Or, I mean, that's, I'd say, appropriate.
Ah, he find, Alan is a good man for going and digging up this stuff. He found out what a daw is. Apparently, the daw was reckoned as a silly bird, and a daw meant a simpleton. So in Shakespeare, then thou dwellest with daws too. So it means you're in the company of fools, basically.
Yeah, you better say that again.
Well, we're all foolish at times, I suppose.
Very foolish.
But even that first chapter, that expression, the divisions of the law, how many people kind of get a grasp on what that actually means, do you think, the divisions?
Wait, what's that again?
This idea of the divisions of the law, the first chapter in that book, the divisions of the law. When we talk of the law, by law, at law, of law, how big a difference does that make?
There's all kinds of divisions. Subject matter, and it's form. It's all based around form. So any way you can twist form around, why you have, you've got different divisions, subdivisions, additions. You know, you got arbitration. You know, you can just really kick it around any way you want to. You got additions.
Mm-hmm.
You got arbitration. Yeah, especially additions. That's lovely. You got invitations. So you give them the jurisdiction, and they can divide your property and your pie and whatever you take in there, your body.
Well, that's what most people bring in, and then they start producing.
Your money.
Can we talk?
And they'll give you fines, penalties, and jail time. And that means that you might even be able to acquire a 5x12 out of that.
5x12, folks, that's Mr. T's way of talking about a little jail cell. But you won't be lonely, right?
You won't get lonely, no.
No, you won't get lonely. There's one I come across, and it's referenced in modern legal usage. I thought it was interesting. Code law. A more specific term than statutory law is sometimes contrasted, as here, with case law. It is written case law, and the only difference from code law because it is written in a different way.
You say code law and...
Statutory.
Statutory?
Uh-huh. And it says code law is preferably two words. This is a thing a lot of people miss, I think. Notice the difference between two
words. Lawyers need extra code law.
Or a hyphen, yeah.
Now, and all the resolutions they passed were statutory law. And then they just actually codify it all into one operation, civil, admiralty, maritime, equity, civil, common law. It's all codified. So it's sort of all blended together.
Mm. And when it comes to this idea of codification of law, you know, a lot of people may not be aware, but the original, the kind of the originator of codex, codex was basically the written form as laid out in the Bible. The Bible could be considered as a codex. Now, there was one word you mentioned today, consolidating, up at the meetup we were talking today, and there was one that stuck out in my mind. And I said, I'm going to look that up, consolidation, or to console, condole, and then we have consolidating underneath. And it says here, a consolidating statute collects the legislative provisions on a particular topic and embodies them in a single statute, often with minor amendments and drafting improvements. But the actual word consolidate, there was a different way you had of looking at that one, wasn't there? It's like a collection, a collective.
I don't know about the process of setting out both the statute law and common law as a, you know, single, well-ordered body of law called, they call it codification.
Mm-hmm.
But for the reasons that it would not be flattering to an examination in, you know, in detail. These lawyers are always, you know, been sort of, shall we say, hostile.
Are you flicking a pen there, Mr. T?
Pardon?
Are you flicking on a pen?
I'm flicking a piece of pen, my pages here. Sorry about that.
No problem. It's coming out a bit loud on the microphone.
The interference. Okay.
Well, here's one for you, if you don't mind. This one, a lot of people have been asking me about this one, so I said I'd go and look it up to be a bit more precise. I try to give people an understanding of why, when signing something, you know, putting a signature down, you would have by and then the colon and then the signature. And a lot of people could get their head around the by aspect, but they couldn't understand the colon. So what I did is I looked this up in punctuation for people. Actually, I think there was a solicitor said it to somebody. They couldn't find any, at least they couldn't find any kind of reason for it, if you will. So I'm just going to read this. The colon. This mark may link two grammatically complete clauses by indicating a step forward from the first to the second. The step may be from an introduction to a main theme, from a cause to an effect, from a general statement to a particular instance, or from a premise to a conclusion. So I think if you think about that and then relate that to the word by, colon, and your signature, I think that should give people a good idea of what that's all about.
Yeah, it comes to a conclusion there, all right. The last form used, you see a lot of it. You even see some of their forms without two dots on there.
Yeah, they all have it. Well, as far as I can tell, most of them have it.
And then a lot of times they just use PP.
Mm. Now, when they use PP, are they using PP in place of propria persona, or are they doing something else?
No, they're just saying they're doing business for somebody else.
Yeah, but usually the PP... Yeah, the PP is that supposed to stand for propria persona, as in place of, instead of?
Yeah, that means I'm the prosecutor. I think that's what it boils down to.
Okay.
stand for the prosecutor.
Right, yeah, no, that's pretty much where I was at, yeah.
Who prosecutes you in court?
Uh-huh.
The parole, I think that's what it means in the, if you look it up in the law book.
Mm.
Did you say pro per or is it per pro? I think it's pro per, isn't it?
No, it's pro pria, P-R-O-P-R-I-A. Pro okay. Pria persona.
I guess I was looking at the, in the, what do they call it, the Murdochs.
Yeah, now there's another version of it as well. Actually, creditors put it up on the screen there, per pro.
Okay. Yeah, the one the bottom line to most of this stuff is if you want to save your neck is contract.
Yeah, well, I think generally when they're using the PP, it's because they don't want to take the they don't want the liability. They're trying to step away. They want to pass it all to you.
Well, it's just confusing you with all them bullshit words.
Exactly. Well, they're all confusing. When I used to think language was easy.
Well, it is.
Yeah. Well, we shall see, I suppose. There's another word that implicit. This one was one that this baked my noodle for a bit. That word implicit. Now I've seen generally. I always took it to mean implied. Well, it seems there's another sense to the word implicit.
They're probably misleading you, or maybe they're, you know, a lot of times they don't really mislead anybody. They're just misapplying what's already written in the law. And there's a lot of difference between misapplying and misleading.
Yeah, but, I mean, the context I've seen implicit, really, when I read the structure of the sentence, you know, when you read the rest of it, what they're really kind of saying is more... It seems like the opposite of implicit. It's not explicit. It's implicit.
Well, most of those words are what would you call it? Formal.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you call it? Informal. I guess common law is informal, and equity is formal, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, just before we leave punctuation, actually, if you don't mind, here's one that I think people should be aware of. Punctuation. Judges and jurists have written more nonsense about punctuation than about any other facet of the language. The well-known dictum that punctuation is not a part of the statute has given rise to even more surreal pronouncements. Punctuation, at any rate, is not part of the English language. This was from Kansas City Life Insurance Company versus Wells, 133, back in 1943 or thereabouts. And the comment is, just as surreally, courts have minimized the effect of punctuation with bizarre statements. Punctuation, or the absence of punctuation, will not of itself create ambiguity. But in Brühlmeier, 1940, says, can that be so? The resolution of the least two capital cases has rested on no more than how the court interpreted a comma. And
that's not a full stop.
Well, yeah, it says here, men's lives may depend on a comma. Rex versus Casement, 1917. I thought that was interesting. Men's lives may rest on a comma. That's a hell of a thing to be able to say.
Well, that's probably an inferior decision.
Mm.
Probably not a controlling case.
Mm. Well, I mean, it's just... so that I suppose that is the question, really. Is all this punctuation, is it actually part of the language? What we call
yeah,
the
they use that's construction and instruction. That's all they can use.
Yeah, but they're basically saying in here, correct me if you think I'm wrong, that the punctuation is like a separate language, or like it's like the operation of the language performs around the punctuation, kind of like the operation of law kind of hinges on the wording. If you see what I mean.
Like I said, all their Equity is constructed and instructed, okay?
I know, but without, like, without punctuation, a lot of sentences, you know, are, it's very difficult to tell what somebody is trying to say in a sentence. You know, if you get a letter with no punctuation, if you don't know the guy, and you have no sense of how the guy, you know, talks or conducts himself normally, you know, you could really get things badly wrong. For example, the chat box. Well, I found that the chat box on tnsradio.ning.com, folks, if you're not a member and you're listening somewhere else, please do sign in. The difference on the chat box, because most of the guys on the chat box have met up, and I noticed in the past on other websites when the people interacting on a chat box haven't actually met up with one another, there'd be a lot of squabbling on the chat box. Whereas on TNS, the chat box is wonderful because most people have either met up or they know people who've met each other, so there's more, it's more convivial, even without, in most cases, sorry to say this, folks, almost no punctuation.
Who's got the, okay.
Who's got which?
Yeah, I'm just wondering about some of the symbols on there. But I guess it's okay. Yeah, this is not really that deep a stuff, but most of it is equity. Equity promotes equity.
Now, you've said that many a time. Can you give me a little more, or give the guys a little more on what you mean by equity promotes equity?
Well, it's...
How, for example, how would you...
Equity is fair.
Fairness.
That's a good, explanation of it, simply. Because it is fair. It promotes fairness. If you kill a guy, they'll probably make you bury him at your expense.
Right.
An automobile accident out here, okay, or vehicle on the road. Even the judge will take sympathy with the driver and say, well, sorry you killed him, but or them, or whatever. But usually they don't get too much of a hard sentence. So I guess it's legal to do that. But when you shoot somebody, it's something different.
Is that the difference with intent?
No, that's equity. Now, is that fairness?
There you go.
They say equity is fair. Equity promotes equity. In another way, you could say civil is what civil? Well, civil is if you haven't. Well, it's all based on if you committed a capital crime. How many people commit capital crimes?
Most people, I don't think, really fully understand what a capital crime is.
Well, murder, treason, or fraud. Yeah.
Right. Now, can we explain that a little more to folks? I mean, I don't think anybody doubts what murder is. But murder is not, strictly speaking, just killing. Murder is killing with intent, basically.
Well, yeah, it's they got to go through the examination, inspection, investigation to get you to trial.
And they want to find your guilt. They don't want you to, well, if you confess, happy days.
Yeah, they want your DNA, and, you know, I've never been involved in anything like that. Treason is about the same thing. That's harder to prove, probably. Fraud is really difficult, per se, but
well,
they got some ways of getting around that by conspiracy.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because what they do is, and I've seen this, not personally, but I've seen it in the courtrooms and in the cases, they put people in prison for conspiracy to commit fraud, conspiracy to commit murder, conspiracy to steal a car, conspiracy to rob a bank or whatever. They do an awful lot with that word conspiracy because you can actually conspire with yourself. I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Conspiracy to violate some state act. Conspiracy to, be an accessory.
Yeah. But this idea that you know, as you say, fraud in itself, well, it's almost impossible to prove it, because unless you're the one that was doing the act, you really don't know one way or the other.
There's not too many fraud cases that control, you know, I don't know if there's any controlling case on fraud. Well, maybe there is, I'm not aware of it.
Okay.
Because I, you know, just scratched the surface of all this law and legalism and what have you. I mean, there's a lot of material out there on civil and equity.
Well, if you're only scratching the surface, I'm only scratching the surface of the surface.
Contract is really a big element since about 1937 on to bring the insurance companies into the operation, and they really didn't have much leeway to operate before that, insurance companies, and that went big time.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, you know, well, the guards actually, when you have an accident anymore, they actually write up the accident report and that insurance companies use it. So they already know, you know, who's going to get the axe or yeah. whatever.
Well, that's a thing. I mean, insurance
because
companies...
they take the guard's report.
Yeah, that's why insurance that's companies tell people, if you have an accident, do not admit liability. You're actually not allowed to admit liability. If you read a policy from the insurance company, there's usually a form of some a list in there, like a checklist. You know, if you have an accident, here's what you do, and it lists off everything. And it very clearly says in there, do not accept liability, because that's not up to you to make that determination, apparently.
If they more or less force it by insurance, it's mandatory.
Uh-huh.
And the guards control it. It's regulated by the state, you know, through the guards. They police it, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is just one element of insurance companies. I'm not saying, you know, you can do whatever you want to with, you know, criticize them or whatever. I'm just throwing out a few ideas and suggestions about how some of the stuff operates.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I mean, I wouldn't criticize it. You know, it's just, it is the way it is, I suppose. That's, you know. Sorry, somebody just sent me a message there in the chat box.
But that's when they brought contract into the thing, and behold, they had to change some of the laws. And that's where you get into, you asked earlier about the codification of the statutes. That's how they merged this this common law, civil, and codes and principles and rules into the statutes. They codified it.
Uh-huh.
And that was an attempt to set, actually, you could just say, well, partly because they may well be statutes bearing, you know, on certain subjects, partly because maybe consolidation statutes, does not attempt to set aside any of these civil laws.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They got consolidating acts that the legislature passes. You know, these statutes on, you know, these several subjects they attempt to arrange to, you know, on this plan, arranged plan that they have with the statutes who are, you know, into, you know, the subject of dividing between the, yeah, many statutes. Okay, there's all kinds of statutes on the books.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, I mean, you could fill a warehouse with them.
And these decisions could be incorporated into the statutes by amendments. The practice of in different combinations. It, you know, keep the statute book in the state far short of, you know, this perfection or whatever you want to call it. So it's, you know, an important part of... Our existence, or, you know, livelihood, you could say. Because a lot of people make a living off of this stuff. We just kind of know how to counterclaim it, I guess you'd say. Counteract it. So it's just rather interesting, some of this, how deep it gets.
Well, this is the thing I think a lot of people find nigh on impossible to get their head around, this idea that, you know, there is so much material, folks, with statutes. I don't think any one man could ever get the whole lot into his head. But what you can do, which I believe is, correct me if I'm wrong, T, that's the way you approach this, and I think I approach it from a similar aspect. I try to look at the, I try to lean back and look at the bigger picture rather than focusing down on the tiny, tiny little detail, even though you do have to pay attention to detail. But until you kind of get a good overall kind of a notion in your head about the whole, what the whole thing is all about. If I were to try and ask you to sum it up, how, you know, in as few words as possible, what's the intent for what we call law? What with, you know, you got governance, you got the church, you know, church and state, you got the international community aspect of things, the UN, NATO, all this type of stuff. I mean, what would you, how would you kind of describe it all if you tried to describe it all in one go?
Well, they're divided into sections. Uh-huh. Sections may be subdivided into subsections. It's really kind of, you know, even complicated in that sense. And, so, comprised of the whole section. A lot of times your captions are part of the law of the section or the subsections, okay? Your captions, you know, the title of, you know, you might have some subject matter jurisdiction, and that caption is part of the law.
Uh-huh.
They're usually, in most cases.
So, for example, I mean, that word, even that word cap, as in caput, captain.
Captions, yeah.
Caption, captions. Capital letter, capital. I like the capstone on the pyramid, folks. That's the head. That's your head. Without the cap, you're caput. That's your head's been chopped off.
Yeah, you better let your head pull the tail around instead of your tail pulling the head around. Captions.
Yeah, this is what this, what's this they say, the tail doesn't wag the dog.
Yeah, you don't want to let your tail drag the head around. Be in trouble. Love simplicity, this stuff. Especially when you get in the contract.
Mm. So
you're already in it. You can't, you know, there's no way that you can separate yourself from contract.
Well, that's the, yeah, that's the thing I was trying to say to people. Unless you're sitting on an island all on your own, you know, other than that, it's almost impossible to avoid some type of contract. Probably, you know, millions of contracts in a day, in a week, in a month. The amount of times you contract, folks, is, even though I know, a lot of people seem to think they have to avoid contracting. Now, what I say is, no, don't avoid it. Just know how to do it. Understanding contracts will, or, you know, seeking to understand contracts will actually put you in a better position, knowing how to contract to get a favorable outcome for you. It doesn't have to be what somebody else might want, but if you're happy with whatever you contract, well, that's okay then. You know, I think a lot of people seem to think, you know, or some guy went into a courtroom or something and he contracted and he, you know, he didn't win his case. Sometimes that, some people walk out of there thinking, that's okay. I didn't win, but I didn't lose. You know, or I still have me house. I have to pay them a few quid or whatever. He might consider that a favorable outcome. It's down to the individual. It's down to the man.
Well, they always say to, be correct, accurate, and complete.
Yeah.
Being contract.
Yeah, well, that, even that's extremely difficult. I mean, when you look up, I've looked up complete, and well,
that's pretty tight. That's as tight as the straight line of the law.
Yeah.
It's a straight line, the linear line.
Hmm.
That puts the stops on them. Well, they have to follow it. You know, we've really actually got it pretty easy. If you look at it, you know, in a realistic way.
Well, I think most people...
That's why they can't cross that delineal line.
Mm-hmm.
That's straight. It's unvarying, okay? Unvarying.
Can we go to another thing, if you don't mind, for the moment? Just because this has been cropping up lately. I hear a lot of people online are now doing it. Well, they have been for many years, of course. But researching trust law, the idea of the trust being the most powerful position, trustee, beneficiary, executor, etc. Can you offer anything in relation to trust? Executor. I mean, in other words, the positions in the courtroom. So, for example, there's a guy, he's basically saying, look, when you go into the courtroom, unless you identify the roles everybody is partaking in, your boat is sunk, basically. So he said, if you go in there and you act like the trustee, the sheriff is going to make the trustee do whatever has to be done, whatever was decided by the administrator.
He said, well, he's impartial too.
Well, right, but the sheriff will, if the trustee is ordered to do something, then he must be seen to do it, right?
Well, yeah. If you accept the writ, you got to actually give him a writ.
Well, I think this guy was talking about. This guy basically does. He goes into the court. You know, he goes into the courtroom. He apparently he enjoys going in there.
Is sort of a misnomer in a way.
Right. But he points at the justice, the guy, you know, the guy in the high chair, and he tells him, you are a public servant, and you are the trustee. And basically he adopts the position then himself of executor, beneficiary.
They are. They collect your fines, penalties, and jail time. So that's, you know, like just invested in municipal bonds, ain't it?
Okay, but what's your opinion of what that guy is doing by going in and pointing at the guy in the high chair and the wig and saying, you are the trustee. You are a public servant.
Oh, you mean if somebody goes in and tells him that?
Yeah.
He'll probably find himself in contempt. He already knows that. The guy in the wig in the high chair.
This guy is—he's getting a lot of views on YouTube. This apparently is what he's doing. Is the guy he's known as Dean Clifford, and he's kind of—he's telling people that this is what he's doing. He's telling people he's done it and it works. He says it works. So I go in there, he says, and I tell a guy. Well, he basically asks, puts it as a question: are you a public servant? And he said, you know, he'll get a bit of silence, and he says once he gets the silence, he tells them, then, well, you are a public servant. You are the trustee.
Yeah, but I'd like to see this Dean, what's his name?
Clifford.
Griffith, do that. He's probably some radio guy. I don't even know the fella.
Well, there's a couple of YouTube videos. I was actually going to give you a list of those videos today. I'll send them across to you shortly. Maybe you might have a look at them. Because
I've heard of him.
Right. He did an interview with Max Egan down in Australia. On Max Egan does the Crow House website. Very interesting fella. But this guy, Dean, I have a Skype, and I'm hoping to have a conversation with him during the week just to see if I can put a few dots on a few I's and cross a few T's just to see exactly where he's coming from, because the information he's putting out there, I think some people, if they were to use it without, I mean, maybe the guy has a better understanding of the whole thing than I do. You know, absolutely. But
I don't think you're going to walk out of that courtroom without a set of cuffs on you.
Well, he says he has
them. If you go in there, it's contemptible when you start telling them anything. Because you're in an inferior court. Now, it may sound good over the radio and on these chat shows. You know, they might have a good gift to gab, too, to some of these radio guys.
Well, I think
some of these guys put even this Gordon, he puts on a good program. There's a guy in Australia.
George Gordon.
A good program.
George Gordon, that fella.
He puts on a good program on contract.
Right.
But see, we all got to get started someplace, and we're going to make a lot of mistakes.
Sure. Well, I mean, this is the point I'd make about Dean Clifford. I mean, Dean, I genuinely believe Dean has gone in there, and I believe he's genuinely doing what he's doing, and he turns around and he walks out, you know. So his conduct is powerful. His actual conduct is actually pretty powerful itself. And I think a lot of people might be missing that point, that he doesn't go in there with his head hanging low and muttering under his breath. When he says something, he says it out loud and proud, and he's, you know, he's not shy.
He's firm about it.
Huh?
He's real firm about it.
Firm. He is firm.
Firm.
Now, George Gordon. Yeah, George Gordon. I actually like listening to George Gordon, I'll be honest. I get a lot out of listening to George Gordon. That's not to say I buy everything he says, but, I mean, most of what he says, I really find it interesting.
He's been at it for a long time. Mm-hmm. Is this the same one I'm thinking of?
Yeah. I'd say it is, yeah, yeah. Now, there you go.
But
yeah.
That,
Mally's a fan of George Gordon as well.
Seems to be a fine line there between, what would you call it? You could put it, redundant. Okay, you give them over and above what they're asking for, you're making yourself redundant. Because it's a, what, presumption?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think
it's an allegation. Okay, let's just nail it down good. Allegation, if you know, it's only an allegation, most of the stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, if you give them over and above what they're asking for, and you better be careful to listen to really what they're asking for. And if you do that, and you trespass on that, they're going to find you, you're going to make yourself redundant, and they're going to have the upper hand. That's
right.
Really a fine line to really understand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So why would you want to do that?
Okay, so for example, yeah, I mean, I think most of the issues he was in there, this is Dean Clifford I'm talking about, that was in there would have been, as you say, in the bracket of allegation as opposed to accusation or, somebody with an actual complaint.
So, see, you actually do your own investigate. You know, you just give him permission to do an investigation on you, okay, because you give him consent. And how do they get consent? By you letting them to do an inspection and examination and then to get the stage of investigation. So you have to, all these things out there that they do, you give them permission to do it voluntarily. They call it an allocution consent, assent consent.
Mm-hmm. Well, when Dean Clifford was talking about walking out of the courtroom, I think before he did that, that was actually the point of allocution. I don't think, maybe he knows about allocution, maybe he doesn't, but what he said at that point was basically allocution, and he turned on his heels and walks. He's probably quite effective, and I think there's also a certain element that when there's a big group of people in the courtroom watching what goes on, if somebody gets close, even, I think they think, well, he got close, okay, we'll let him walk. Even if he didn't do it exactly right, sometimes they let you walk, and hoping that the next guy comes in is going to be an absolute idiot, try the same thing that guy tried, and then they nail you.
He might have walked out, but they started a new case on him.
I don't know about that, to be honest. I'd have to do a bit more research. Well, I mean, I'm looking forward to talking to the guy. Hopefully, I'll get to talk to the guy fairly soon. He seems an interesting fella either way. I mean, I always like guys who are prepared to, who are prepared to put the work in and do that. They've done. He's done his reading. You know, he's done his reading. He's well researched, and he's got what they say a big set of cojones, which helps. You know.
And a lot of this stuff is only an apparent contract.
Mm-hmm.
It's only in truth and actually in no contract at all. Because
mm-hmm.
You have the last part of it. Well, at first you gotta commit yourself.
I mean, I know, for example, I did things in courtrooms years and years ago. I know I did them wrong, and I know now that I could have been slung in jail, easy for contempt. But they didn't put me in jail for contempt, and they did actually let me just walk out of there. Now, I thought that somehow it was me. I was effective in some of what I said, but I know now I was wrong. But it was effective at the time. We're going back, nearly 15 years ago. Silly things, most of it, but They could have nailed me. I know now they could have nailed me. The guy basically, I think at the time he was thinking, well, at least this, somebody is trying to understand this stuff. And I think that's why he let me off. I think he took pity on me. You know, I think I entertained him for an afternoon.
You know? I don't know if anybody has ever really walked out of there without paying some kind of fine or penalty or even having to go back in there and do it again.
No, they, well, I mean, some of them, well, as I said, long story, but, you know, I mean, really, I mean, they were minor things, you know, we're talking like, you know, city traffic violations and whatnot. But, you know, as I said, I mean, I was probably stupidly confident. Sometimes that works.
They don't make themselves confident.
Yeah.
They don't sign anything. They don't contract with you. They keep clean hands off them.
Exactly. Exactly.
They wash their hands of anything that they're responsible for in there. You're the one that's responsible when you're in there. Or any of these contracts you make with insurance companies or social welfare or whatever.
Well, that time, you know, when I turned to the clerk in the court and I said, well, you know, and I basically put a question to the clerk, and the clerk looked at the judge and he responded, and the guy acting as judge, he put his hand on his head and he lowered his head. He shook his head because he knew that the clerk had just given testimony in open court. So, you know, I walked out on that one. But again, it was luck, I suppose, and probably luck combined with stupidity. So.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal was, so. I've always been caught up in some pretty, I thought very, you know, maybe not difficult, but uh-huh. I was just not aware. I had all, you know, a little bit of knowledge of what was going on, so it was rather difficult.
Well, as you say, I think my conduct helped me. And can we talk about conduct for a minute? Because conduct is, I talk to people about their conduct. You know, we were having a conversation couple of weeks ago, myself and yourself, I think we were talking about some guy who, you know, there was a lot of people in his home and he didn't want them there. And at the time he stood up, I think something along the lines of he stood up and he's, and they asked him, they said, hey, where are you going? And he said, I'm going to get a gun. And if you guys are still here when I get back, I'm going to shoot them, shoot a load of holes in you. Was that the one?
Yeah. They won't stick around too long. I tell you,
well, that's
when you find out they don't have any business there. They're just trying to contract. Next time you come back, have a court order, and you never see them again.
But that story, the way it was told, was that a repossession or an eviction or what was that in relation to?
I think it dealt with revenue.
Revenue, okay.
And yeah, criminal assets bureau.
We were saying there was an interesting aspect because he used the word gun, not firearm or, you know,
rifle or.
Yeah, yeah. He didn't give it the title that they operate with.
I think I don't know what they call it in the service. You call it your gun. I don't.
Piece.
I think they murder you or your rifle.
Your piece, isn't it? A piece.
Piece. Yeah, one place they call it their peace.
Because it brings you peace, apparently.
shoot somebody. Or whatever you do with those things.
Well, they rest in peace, yeah? And then, you know, you have peace as well. I'm joking.
Oh, there's a lot of discipline in there. Well, that's all character and conduct is discipline. Mm-hmm. You gotta be polite, that's all it really means. Be polite. They want you to be polite in there.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes when you think you're polite and they contract with them, why, you're letting them in your, storehouse. Then they can, you know, divide up your, whatever you got in your storehouse, money or cakes or pies or cookies, you know, biscuits, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they do it. Because you let them in your storehouse.
Oh, we have a question for you here, if you don't mind. In relation to, you know, that little one-liner offering the bank, you know, a little, the official offer, offering them a couple of quid to operate the account over time instead of coming and gobbling everything you have. You know, I mean, you've often spoke to me about, you know, giving them a little something. When, you know, maybe they're looking for a lot, but you haven't got a lot, and you give them a little something to hold them at bay. Can you give your opinion on that?
Oh, you mean like some kind of an offer?
Yeah, so like, let's say they're saying you owe 1,000, and you haven't got 1,000, but you have 800. And, you know, you're happy to give them the 800, but you haven't got the 1,000.
And they're asking for 800.
No, they're asking you for 1,000, say, and you only have 800.
I think that if you make that, what are they? You know, send them a piece of paper as consideration, right?
Uh-huh.
So I think that would probably, if it was made up properly, I think that would maybe cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think basically what Eddie's, the question is from Eddie. I think what Eddie's trying to find out is basically, do you think that the offer, the official offer, by offering them something officially in writing and maybe attaching the check or the instrument to it, basically saying, look, this is the maximum I can give you, but I'm giving it to you. So, you know, basically to stop them from, you know, maybe pulling you into the next level, whereas if you just point blank refuse to send them anything. I mean, really, it was really just constructed to assist people, I suppose, who haven't really got a full grasp of everything. That's why when I describe it to people, I say, look, it's not a remedy. It's not even a, you know, I describe it as a sticking plaster to give you a bit of time maybe to get your head around some of this stuff.
Because they, you know, every time you do something, it's consideration.
Yeah.
Even if it's noticed,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what a lot of these people have been doing. Send them different types of what they call offers or consideration.
Yeah, well, it's all an offer, right? As you say, everything you put down, when you put a pen to paper, folks, and you send that piece of, I don't care if you draw a box or a circle, and, you know, you draw something on a piece of paper and you send it to somebody, it's an offer.
Right.
They might not know exactly what the offer is, but it's an offer.
So that would be about, if you don't have any money, what they call money,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how you could send them any of that. And then they'll put you in arrears.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when they send you that final demand notice is when they're, that's what they enter as evidence against you when they take you into court or subpoena you or summons you, okay? That's the only thing they really use against them. All these cases, here recently that I saw was, usually they get those demand notice letters from the mortgage company or the, if they consolidate their loans or whatever,
yeah,
banks.
They usually ask to see the notices.
Yeah, they use the, but they send registered mail, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they call a demand notice. Some type of a demand letter. And that's all they put as evidence into the court.
Oops,
you can now look at the records. Okay?
Do you want to answer that?
Anybody can now look at the records and see what they enter in the evidence.
I can play a song if you want to answer that.
I think my doorbell was ringing.
Okay, is that what that is?
Did anybody hear that?
Yeah, everybody heard it, I think.
No, they know. So all you have to do is find that in Ireland, I guess, find that sound and you'll be in.
I'll tell you what I'm going to do, Tom, just for a minute. I'm gonna play a quick song, 10 o'clock nearly, and I'm going to play a song, folks, and we'll be back just after this. And welcome back, everybody, to tnsradio.ning.com. Time check, 22:02, 28 of the 8, 2011 AD, apparently, and I'm still online here with the wonderful Mr. T, as I like to call him. You can hear me loud and clear, T.
clear.
Excellent.
Remember, you gave me that title.
Well, I'm only lending it to you.
Huh?
It's only on loan.
Is there a patent on it?
Well, somebody else was using it. There's a big black guy in America was using it for a long time.
Oh, is that right? I never was too fond of that. I mean, I guess I was aware of that. Right. Mohawk or whatever. Tough guy.
That's the one.
Tough lad. Tough chap. I want to cover everybody here.
That's the guy. Well, you're a tough guy, right? For a lover.
No, for a midget.
Well,
they don't know that, do they?
Well, I think when I talk about Mr. T, I think some people expect this huge big guy.
Well, I am.
Hey, there you go, see?
There they have it. Right straight from the horse's mouth.
Well, I'm not the horse, right?
What?
I'm not the horse, though.
Well, I hadn't thought about that.
Can we,
my glasses on here. I'm getting blind, I guess.
Work away. That song I just played, folks, that was from a band called Jem, J-E-M. That one was It's Just a Ride, which, of course, I love to play that. I haven't actually played it on radio in a long time, but It's Just a Ride, folks. I mean, that's what you're doing here. You know, it is a ride, but, you know, it can be a roller coaster, or it can be a merry-go-round. You know, the choice is yours, I guess. You know, some people are thrown in front of an oncoming roller coaster, but you can step out of the way. Can we talk about that one, Mr. T? Opting out, to opt out from a contract. I think that's an interesting. That's a topic.
You know, I'm going to say trouble to learn any of this stuff is contract is explained here simply to say it's very bewildering, okay? Bewilderment, no. What do you mean, cop out?
No, opt out.
Huh, opt out?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, you can get an offer and... Either party has an option to opt out of a contract.
But most people don't know how to do that, do they? Well, they don't seem to.
Well, when somebody meets you on the road or, you know, a supermarket or wherever, you don't want to, you know, they brush up against you, you might say, well, I think I'll opt out here instead of saying something.
Right.
They might have brushed you. That's sort of opting out, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's face where most people think the rubber meets the road with contracts is in the old courthouse, you see.
Right.
So opting out of a contract in a courtroom scenario situation. You know, the judge opts out all the time. People, I've seen it, you know, You mentioned it to me one day. You said, well, he opts out, right? He just opts out. So I went and sat in the courtroom down the back, and I just watched the guy opt out of about 3 contracts, and nobody seemed to mind. Now, the guy who thought he was, you know, the defendant, and I was thinking, now, how could that guy opt out the way the guy up in the high chair opted out? You know, it was all civil now. It was all civil, you know, traffic tickets and whatnot, you know.
But no, you got to understand that judge is in a different position sitting there in a high chair.
Yeah.
You know, he told a man the other day, a man asked him if he had a complaint against it. And he said, no, I don't have a complaint against you. And he was avoiding, you know, he was opting out of a contract there because he didn't want a contract with the defendant.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You see, do people realize that's what's going on, I wonder? When the guy in the high chair, folks, if you were asked to ask him, do you have a complaint against me? And if he says, well, no, I have no complaint against you, what are your options? You see, the other guy across the way, prosecutor or whatever you want to call him, you know, if he doesn't have a complaint against you, and you ask the guy in the high chair, you know, do you have a complaint against me? Apparently nobody has a complaint against you. It's time to walk, right? Time to do a 180.
that's usually way down the pike.
Mm-hmm.
It's way down the pike. There's a lot that happens before it gets to that point.
Sure, but I mean, we've talked about all the stuff, I think, to a certain degree about what happens before, but I mean, I think how to do the 180. A lot of guys have trouble with the 180.
Yeah, they're very hesitant.
Mm.
You think you have to be polite and stand there and take all these fines, penalties, and jail time. Uh-huh. You want to be polite about it. So apparently you fork over your fines, penalties, and jail time, and they say, well, great, you're a polite fellow or lady. Mm-hmm. That's what they want. We don't know when to do the 180.
Yeah. So, for example, there was a guy about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, I was talking to him, and he was explaining to me something he did. He went in there I don't know what the situation was, but he went in anyway. He went in. And, the to-ing and fro-ing, the dance, the courtship began in the court. I've started to call it courtship. You know? So they were dancing with each other for a little bit. But eventually, he put the question to him. He said, look, do you have a complaint against me? And he didn't get a response. Or at least a response he did get, indicated to him there was no complaint against him. And he just said, well, apparently there's no complaint. I didn't hear the complaint. And he said, apparently I'm done here today. And he just turned and started walking. Now, what happened then when he got outside, somebody said to him, that's a trick, you have to go back in. And he listened and he went back in and he got roasted.
You know. So they started a new case.
Oh, yeah. Well, he showed up again. He showed up again, right? But he was done. He was already done. He was out of there, and he went back in. I just couldn't figure out why he went back in. I mean, I said to him, I said, what was on your mind? And he said, well, I was fearful. I said, well, fear, that'll get you every time.
You want to be accurately wrong.
You want to be what?
Accurately wrong.
Okay, I like that. I get...
So that's one thing about that opting out is actually it's a voidable contract that is a contract. It's actually a contract, but that it is capable of being avoided at the option of one party or the other, okay?
Well, this...
Put it into words.
Yeah, so he'd already opted out, you see, but then he went back in. He was already done. He was finished, but then he went back in again, and as you say, they started a brand new case, and they took a little something from him.
That's why you can call everything that's true.
Yeah.
It's only apparent that it's true. Mm-hmm. It's really...
Well, they presume that the apparent truth of a matter or subject is good enough for them to make a determination, right?
Well, if you give it to them.
Yeah. That's what I mean. They're happy enough. They say, well, apparently you're guilty, and apparently we found your guilt, and apparently you've just been fined 500 whatever. So, either pay up or, there's a room over there with a nice building, lots of men, they keep you company. You get to make shoes, and, we'll feed you. And we keep you nice and safe.
You can only hang around them herrings after you win. You stick around in there and play pocket pool. They're going to haul you off to the 5x12 again.
Uh-huh. Oh, we have a question. Here we go. A question from Wobbly. And Wobbly, I like the way Wobbly phrases his question. It's good stuff, Wobbly. Vin, in your opinion, do the latest terms and conditions supersede the previous terms and conditions for a credit card? I think he's talking about here. Yeah, credit card. If the latest terms do not contain a name, only an address, what effect would this have if entered into county court as evidence? Whoa, there's a whole lot there, Wobbly. Okay, well, here's what I would say or suggest. If somebody sends latest terms and conditions, well, that comes down to offer and counter-offer. So if you accept the counter-offer, that's now the offer, that's now the contract. Do you think people see that, T, that they understand that, you know, if I make Mr. T an offer, if I say, Mr. T, would you like a cup of tea? And he responds to me, I prefer a cup of coffee. See, that was offer, and he didn't accept my offer. He made a counter offer, which automatically removed my original offer.
Yeah, there's some you gotta be careful there on those.
Well, exactly. Well, look, I mean, I used to do this when I was a builder, when I was working, you know. The woman of the house might come in and say, will you have a cup of tea or coffee? You know, and I'd say, well, it depends on what biscuits you're going to give me.
You offer them a cup of tea and they turn it down and they give you a counter offer.
Yeah, but I mean...
you can reject that and say, well, you didn't accept the...
Well, you see, I used to make a presumption. If the woman said, would you like a cup of tea or coffee? I'd say, well, it depends on what biscuits you're going to give me. I made a presumption that she was giving me biscuits, too.
What that Mr. C got to tell us there? What's he trying to say?
Mr. C? Hang on. I'd have to scroll back a bit. Where was that?
Well, that's on 1003.
Well, I'm not seeing one from Mr. C. Did he send you a PM? The point I'm making is, or the point I'm making badly, I might admit, is that a counter offer, if I make Mr. T an offer, if I say, Mr. T, would you like a cup of sovereign tea? And if he says to me, I'd like a cup of coffee, that's a counter offer. The tea is not there anymore. He's now made me a counter offer for a cup of coffee. I'm willing to do something for him because I've made him an offer.
Now, this is like blinking your eyes. You can't, that's not evidence of anything. You can't tell me what happened when you blinked your eyes. That's, you know, it really comes down to a lot of stuff. It's just evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's just one thought on it, okay?
Well, I think that's why people need to get this through their head. For example, a murder weapon, the gun, you know, the shooter in a courtroom, it's only evidence. The gun doesn't prove anything on its own. That's no proof of anything. That's just, well, it's simply what they call a gun, or, you know, a weapon piece, whatever you want to call it. Whether it was used with intent, that's where the rubber meets the road. That's the bit that they want to find out. What was your intent when you had the thing in your hand and you pointed it at this guy and you pulled that thing and he dropped down dead? They want to know about your intent. If your intent was not to kill the guy, you can walk out of there. If your intent was to kill the guy, you can still walk out of there, depending on what your intent was. Was your intent to protect somebody, to protect your family? And, you know, there's all sorts of, what's the word?
Well, most of them convictions are all, that kind of, capital crimes are usually interrogatories or depositions. They usually get all that evidence before they even go into court.
Yeah, they line all that. They line all that up at the beginning. They call it getting their ducks in a row.
Or eyewitnesses, recognition, and recall.
Uh-huh.
They call it.
So did you say interrogatories there or?
Interrogatories and depositions.
Right. Can we talk about interrogatories? That's a word that, maybe a lot of people don't really have an idea of the sense of that word. Can you give us a little something on what you the sense of that word, interrogatories?
Well, they do that when they arrest you on a bench warrant, or if you get really, belligerent, whatever, indifferent, they think that your conduct means an arrest, so they pull you into the station, just on this minor stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they do interrogatories and depositions right there. They get you sign a statement.
Right.
And all they're doing they're just doing their job for the judge, okay, for the court, the prosecutor. When they get you in there, they'll have all this stuff they'll read in the evidence against you. And you already had given it to them in interrogatories or what they, interrogatories and depositions are pretty similar. where maybe depositions are done with more, like police courts and banks and mortgage companies and, you know, like county council meetings or county commissioners, whatever you want to call them.
So would you say that the word...
Meetings are more or less done with depositions, and interrogatories are more done with the law enforcement at the stations or, you know, guard stations and so forth.
Okay, but would you say, for example, interrogatory would be part of the interrogation, as in it's the questioning, the methodology imposed by the questioning, or... No, I'm not saying that right. What would you call it?
Yeah, that's just what they call
the process.
Operation, okay, overall operation.
Would you say it's the process of questioning?
Yeah.
Right, right. So in other words, they're performing a process. Aiming for success.
They're getting the process and the proceeds in line with the, you know, 5x12 and what you're going to end up paying. You know, they call them proceeds, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Process and of the proceeds. Process of the proceeds is what it amounts to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Well, that's why, for example, now, a lot of people might not realize this, but that's why, for example, in a modern-day situation, if you're pulled in on a civil matter, they interview you. If you're pulled in there on a criminal matter, it's interrogation. See, they interview you because there's a job, apparently. Somebody has a job opening somewhere for an employee, so they interview you to see if you suit that position within the corporation.
Yeah, you actually, you can't get any. That's really starting a criminal process,
right,
if you volunteer for it.
Well, this is it, you see, and a lot of people do it. Really, because this is it, most people don't understand or comprehend, you know, when they're when they say, "Oh, we'll come into this room," they arrest you, right? And they bring you in, and they maybe take your belt and your bootlaces, whatever, you know, your wallet, and they lead you down to a cell, and they open the cell, and they shove you in, and they shut the door. And usually, what happens is a short time later, they come to the door again, they open the door, and if you ask, "Am I being released?" they'll say, "No, we're bringing you for an interview." See, they want an interview, but if you killed somebody and they think you know, you meant to kill the guy, then they're going to bring you for an interrogation.
You know, they're going to keep you up all night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, questioning. And then they want, you know, they really just wear you down, really. And maybe they've got good reason to. I don't know.
Well, sure. That's what I mean. That's the difference, though. You know, if they think you actually hurt somebody, oh, by golly, they'll go at you, folks. If it's a traffic violation, well, they'll interview you. You know, some violation of a code, statute, whatever. That's an interview. That's what they call it. I mean, I'm just saying that's what they call it, you know.
It's actually an invitation.
Yeah, well, I mean, what they do in the interview, they write down everything. You know, they make a note, and then they ask you, here, sign this. They slide it over to you. They say, okay, well, there you go now. You know, sign.
You're the sheriff, you mentioned earlier, you know, that habeas corpus or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he can't help you if you're going to waive all your rights.
Mm. Well, you see, yeah, I mean, in an interview situation... They ask you to sign to agree that every word that was spoken is what was written down. In an interrogation situation, they do that. It looks like the same thing, but when they push that piece of paper over to you, they want you to sign that as a confession. You know, if they got a dead body and you and a gun, they want you to sign it as a confession. That's a different story.
That's how a lot of people come out. You know, they got everybody thinking out there that, you know, they can do it wrong, but, you know, we can, you know, they say, well, you're, you know, doing some kind of a wrong. You aren't supposed to be parking there or something, you know. But, they do a lot of things that are maybe wrong too, but, I said, well, you better go talk to somebody else. Don't come and talk to me. I don't have any. I don't even know you. You're coming up and telling me I'm not supposed to be parking my car there. I said, I could probably find a lot of things. I could say that. I just think it and say, hey, you go talk to somebody else about it. But that's the way a lot of this stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Somebody's sticking their nose into your business. And we're sovereign. You know, we're paramount, okay? We have the, you know, authority. As long as we haven't committed a capital crime, you got all kinds of leeway.
Do you think people really get, you see, this is it, I think, it's, I mean, I think that television has a lot to do with this, Tom, because people have for years and years sat down and watched a lot of garbage on the television, and a lot of the garbage on the television is cop shows or lawyer shows or, you know, Ally McBeal and L.A. Law and, you know, all this forensic stuff that's out there. And people think they actually have an idea of how the whole thing works after watching this stuff. You know, they form opinions.
Well, sitting there, you can't, you don't have to respond to that, so how are you going to respond to anybody in real life?
Well, exactly. That's the point, yeah. I mean,
if that's all you've been doing is watching television all your life, how are you going to respond? You don't, the television doesn't demand a response out of you.
No.
So you're up, I'd say up shit crick.
No paddle in sight.
Pardon my language, but I don't know how else to put it.
Well, that's a place a lot of people have been up.
Well, it's real simple, really.
Well,
we just don't know. No, that is really a big factor of society is putting all this stuff out there where we don't have to respond, and then we run into a situation we just don't know how to, what they call us, correspond. We don't know how to verbalize. We don't know how to relate.
Well, okay? There's one. The difference between the difference between respond and correspond. If you were to try to talk about what's unique to different and or different to respond and correspond.
Well, correspondence is really just, you know, that's a form of both, but it's actually another form of, you know, putting it on paper, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Correspondence. Just depends on how it's used and how it's spelled. Tax people usually like to use it. Their correspondence, or they say, they got another phrase, what is it? Initiated. They don't say you initiated, but your initiation. Well, that's true. Usually we do initiate things that don't even realize it.
Well, a lot of the times, even if they initiate something, our response to that, they will then respond saying, okay, now you initiated it. Your response can initiate the next part of the process for them. And then they get to say, well, you started it, basically.
Whenever somebody complains or gossips about somebody, in a sense, initiating something.
I like to put things into real-world examples. So if I was to give somebody an example of that, what I'd say is, imagine you're in a pub, you know, public house or whatever, and you walk past somebody and you brush off them, and they turn to you and they say, hey, watch it, pal. And you put your face back in their face and you say, no, you watch it. Well, hey, now you started it. Anything happens next is because of you, because you didn't apologize, you didn't say excuse me, you didn't just walk away. You put your face back in his face, and it was, you know, an accidental brush off, and you took a dislike to it, or you took exception to it, and now suddenly there's a big ding-dong going on. But you initiated it, even though, you know, he might have said something to you first, or he might have, you know. That's the way this stuff works.
If you respond, you...
Inappropriate response.
If you respond, you initiated it.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Oh, absolutely.
You walk away, there's nothing initiated, so you don't have to worry about it. Okay.
So, yeah, Gary's put in there, it was not a counteroffer. It is a counteroffer, but that's what I'm saying. It's a
counteroffer. Okay.
That's a hell of a... That's a hell of a counter offer. That's a hell of an offer. I just need to pop to the loo, Mr. T, if you don't mind. Excuse me, everybody. I'll be back in a minute. I'm just going to play another little song here. I got to do this, and I got to bring me dogs in because they're out there barking. Just give me 2 minutes. I'll be back after this. You're listening live to tnsradio.ning.com, and I have the wonderful Mr. T online. So we'll be back just after this. And welcome back to tnsradio.ning.com. Time is now 10:31. 28th of the 8th, 2011 AD, apparently, and I'm still online, live here with Mr. T. And what I wanted to get into next, if that's okay with you folks, is identity, ID, entity. This idea that, you know, you must identify yourself. Now, some people have different ideas and notions, I suppose, about what identity is, what it may be, how it operates, and, you know, all the different all the different good stuff that is associated with this. Would you agree, Mr. T, that to identify yourself, I think a lot of people worry about identifying themselves, where really, you know, identity is not that big a deal, right?
Yeah, it is a big deal.
Well, it's not a, it's a big deal if you don't identify yourself.
That's where a lot of it is at. Mm-hmm. But you got to really put it across in a polite way.
Okay, so if I were to say to you, there's a lot of people out there who say, don't identify yourself. Well, you're going to get the cuffs on pretty quick, right? You know, the idea that, you can go up and identify, or give them, you don't identify yourself as such, but you can give them what they call identity, yeah? You know, might have a picture and a name and maybe some information and, you know, whatever.
They probably get more training than that than any other thing, you know, that there is in, the police or guard, law enforcement.
Well, it's the one thing we hear again and again and again. If you look at these videos on YouTube, the cop, you know, whatever, he always comes up to people and they say, yeah, show me your identification. Now, what I've often said to people is, why do you think they want identification? What are they trying to identify you as? They're trying to identify you as something, or they want you to identify yourself to them. Basically, they're trying to see, are you a belligerent? Are you onside or are you offside?
No, not really. They're actually impartial. You just
Well, a lot of the cops aren't impartial. You know, when they ask for identification, if you don't give it, you know, they might be impartial, but they'll
if you don't give it,
they'll clip you across the back of the head with a billy club.
Sorry,
T. Say again.
They probably get I wouldn't call it realistic, but they might be real cynical.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're addressing an allegation. When they ask for something, they'll say, well, you know, they're going to just take a road stop.
Okay, let's do road stop. Right.
Just walk up to the car window. What do? You don't roll the window down? Well,
most people do, right?
On the window. I mean, there's all kinds of scenarios, and it all starts right there. Okay.
Yeah. That's your point of contact or your point of contract.
Right.
That's your opportunity.
If you roll down the window, maybe you want to open the door and get out and stand there. And if you do that appropriately, I'm sure he'll accept that.
Mm-hmm.
Or she.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think...
You don't even have to give him a driver's license. You just pull out an identification with your picture and name on it. Here's my identification. This is what you're looking for. Just stick to that.
Yeah. Well, I've done that, you see. So I happen to know how that goes. The first time I did it, he didn't mind at all. I just said, I didn't say, this is what you're looking for. But the minute I stopped, you know, it was a man. And he just walked up. And I already had the window down. I actually had my arm out the window, you know, while I was driving along and I was having a smoke. And, he stopped. He put the hand up and I had to stop, or I was going to drive over him. So I stopped and I had the little pink thing, you know, the little, what they call the driving license, and I said, oh, is this what you're looking for? And he said, yep. And he just took it. And he made some notes, and he said some stuff. And then he offered it back to me, and I said, you know, you're done with this now, yeah? I can have it back? And he said, oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, you can have it back. I took it back, and he turned his back to me, and he started to walk, and then he came back, and he said, oh, if you don't ever want to see me again, he said, you'll pay that. And I said, well, that's fine. Because I didn't mind seeing him again. And one day he came up to the house, apparently. He came up here, you know. So I saw him again, and I was like, happy. That was the contract fulfilled. And he left. Yeah, you know, we had a small conversation.
Road stop,
yeah. You know, I had the kids in the car at the time, so it's always difficult when you have others in the car, you know. If you're on your own, that's different. But when there's others, you know, especially young ones with you, you know, you got to be careful about this stuff, folks. For your own sake.
But, yeah, I don't know exactly what happened. You give him the keys, you say?
No. The driving license. I said to him, here, is this what you're looking for, you know?
Oh, well, yeah, your name is on that. You give him a driver's license.
Oh, yeah, that's what I gave him, yeah. I said, here, is this what you're looking for?
You don't have to give him the driver's license. You just give him any kind of picture identification, okay?
Oh, yeah, passport, driving license.
First of all, they got to find out. The key to that identification is to call that name in. They got to check and see if they've got any type of, you know, what that name is all about, that picture.
Well, I mean, can you talk about the passport? Because, you know, I had to do that once. I had to give the passport. I didn't have the driving license on me, and I did have the passport, and I just said, here. He accepted it.
Well, that should worry. All they have to do is, they have to determine what they're going to do with you, and then what jurisdiction you fall into.
Well, he didn't seem too bothered. He took the passport, he looked, and he folded it, and he handed it back, and he went, yeah, off you go. So I didn't argue. I went, okay, I'm happy, and off I went.
He didn't call in or anything?
Nope.
Well, that's a lot of times what they do. They don't, you know, they're just stopping you, see, whatever. I don't know what they're looking for. You don't know what they're looking for.
Oh, I hadn't a
clue. They're just stopping people and asking them for identification.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, he was happy. He wasn't, you know, didn't upset him in any way, shape, or form. He was happy, apparently, you know. Okay, that's good. Off you go.
A lot of times they're trying to get you to repeat your name, which I guess you can. I mean, they aren't holding really trial out there on the road or on the road stop. Mm. We're just talking about road stop now. You don't apply that to any kind of a stop.
Yeah. Some of them kind of are, though, aren't they?
The what?
Some of them are kind of, you're in court with some of these guys, you know. It's some of these guys can be very particular.
You mean the defendant or the police?
The police, you know, like if the tax disc doesn't appear to be the way, you know, the way they want it to be.
Well, yeah, they'll say, which way are you going or where are you coming from? Or they'll be asking you a lot of pertinent questions. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's very offensive to people.
Yeah. Yeah, people feel it's an invasion of their privacy, but then they still give the information. And I often said to people, well, you felt it was an invasion of your privacy, and yet you still gave the information. Why? Usually they do so out of fear.
Because all you have to do is identify yourself.
Exactly.
But I mean, the sheriff ain't going to protect you if you don't properly identify yourself.
No.
He can't help you a bit. Hmm. They said, well, how come the sheriff doesn't help us? We have our papers in there. Well, that's why he can't help you, because he can't tell you if you make a blunder out there. He can't. He might think that it's your constitutional right to make a blunder.
Well, and I guess it is, really. You know.
Well, how can he protect you then? He's impartial, ain't he?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, you got a right to screw up, just just as you got a right to do it right. You got a right to screw up too, I suppose. You know.
Then what the hell's wrong with everybody? Or, I mean, you know, if that's what they want to do, if you want to give up all your life, why then go do it. It's for those who help themselves, okay? Yeah, I would say.
Sorry, I was just typing a message there to somebody. Question. Hold on. There we go, got it.
Are you getting input on Skype, or are you getting all your input?
I get input from everywhere. It comes from all directions.
Yeah, I haven't been watching that one.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, look, I get questions coming in over the chat box, questions coming in over Skype, sometimes just
opinions. They mention a lot of things about America on here. I don't know. Right. Same jurisdiction, so there's really no difference between Australia, New Zealand, any Commonwealth jurisdiction. Any Commonwealth. Right, Commonwealth, okay.
Well, you see, this is it. Apparently, you see, a lot of people seem to think Ireland, the corporation, known as Ireland, if you will, is not part of the Commonwealth anymore. But actually, as far as I can tell, they are, but not. It's not openly part of the Commonwealth, but it is actually still, as far as I can tell, it's still part of it, or at least there's a jurisdiction being exercised from the Commonwealth here.
Yeah, it's pretty much all the same. Same laws, same civil and same equity, okay? They use a few different words, but it's all, you'll find it pretty uniform, okay? There's not much difference.
Sorry, I'm not.
They're all inferior courts.
I'm not laughing at you, T. Just Paddy Mackey
put
something.
But they got a rule on that civil, okay? Just like Minister of Justice at that time. On that gay rights or that law that they put, or resolution they put into effect about sharing housing or something if you live with they call it a partnership agreement or something, legislation a couple years ago in Ireland. And he said at the very end of his speech that he said, I don't know why they have to pass these resolutions. It's not going to affect the civil jurisdiction. I thought that was quite a statement.
Say that to me again. He said what?
He said it's not going to affect the civil jurisdiction. Civil law. He said civil law, okay. That's what he said.
Interesting.
A lot of people probably missed that.
So why do you think he expressed himself in that way? Because it can't.
Well, he's a pretty decent, fair fellow. He's probably one of the better people that more or less put the info out there, pro and con, okay? Equity and, civil. So he tells it both ways. He doesn't try to, consolidate the civil jurisdiction there, okay? He's bringing that out of the that statute that they're bringing in. So, I thought that was a very good statement. He didn't attempt to consolidate that attempt. To set out that civil, okay? If that's the way, another way of putting it, okay?
Okay, can I, again, I like to jump around with certain issues when we're doing our thing here, Mr. T. Can I bring something else to your attention? This has been happening a lot. And as I notice, different people making videos and videoing the cops, and they're putting these videos on YouTube, and a lot of the times the cops are coming up to these guys and telling them, you can't video me, and the guys are getting into arguments and discussing, and sometimes the cops grab the camera, and they, maybe they try to bend a few bits of them that doesn't normally bend. But these guys who are doing all this with the videos, sometimes in fairness somebody might be getting the hell knocked out of them, and, the cops come up and they say, you can't film this. How do you think, where do you think those guys stand? I mean, should they stand quietly? Should they, start yakking or back away,
Oh, you mean that was my thought on the videos and the CCTV stuff that the state does, or
No,
the
not
police?
What the...
people in general.
No, not what the state does. What, you know, when you see, like, let's say there's a cop beating the tar out of some guy, and maybe his buddy is filming for evidence, you know. Maybe they're going to have a court case and the buddy is filming it, you know. I often wondered, why is he filming it instead of helping his buddy? But apparently, you know, some people think filming the thing rather than helping you is better.
Well, you mean some of the stuff you see, and it looks kind of brutal?
Yeah.
On the road stops, for instance?
Yeah.
Well, some of that actually happens.
Oh, I know.
And that's just the way they do it. This guy was driving recklessly. They shot him. I mean, you know, he started speeding, and he was really, you know.
Well, no, I'm more talking about, you know, the likes of the cops.
Some fell out there in Texas or Arizona or California. I don't know. Maybe chased him, and finally they ended up shooting him. And well, they give the cops a bad time over it because they did beat him, and they did end up, I think, shooting him. I can't remember the fellow's name now, but they made it, you know, that was worldwide news for a long time.
Well, let's say, yeah, I mean, I'm talking about some of this, you know, inverted commas, cops, maybe they're just back from Iraq or somewhere like this, and they're a bit messed up in the head, and they give them a badge and a gun, and they go out there, and they're beating the tar out of people, you know, over a traffic violation, or the guy won't sign the ticket, and they just beat the shit out of him instead of, you know, going through the process. You know, and there's some guy videoing the whole thing, you know, but the camera is maybe his mate or his friend or his wife or whatever. And, you know, they tell him, stop videoing. You don't have the right to video me. And the guy gets into an argument, and before you know it, they're getting the hell beaten out of them, too.
Well, they don't have any law for the red zone, do they?
Hmm. Well, we do, though. Yeah, but we do, right? I mean, we know that's wrong. You know, you're not supposed to beat the crap out of somebody because they point a camera at you.
Yeah, we were talking about that here a while back. Yeah, they got a hard job out there with some of these nuts, as I call them.
Mm-hmm.
Really. And you know they're out there.
Oh, yeah. They're out there, all right.
Huh?
They're out there, all right. I've met a few.
And what else can the cops do? Well, it makes it so you got a family and children. I do, too.
Mm-hmm.
You got to keep the highways and pathways and sidewalks and, you know, lanes halfway safe for, you know, our children, and right? I don't have all the solutions. I just know a little bit about when some of these...
Well, absolutely. Well, I mean, none of us do.
Well, the citizens, you know, have a problem. I might get involved or get some assistance, okay?
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I mean... I agree. That's why TNS Radio is seeking solutions. We don't claim to have the solutions, folks, but we seek solutions to the things that we find, you know, that displease us, or you know, that we find difficult to overcome. You know, I mean, if we find a solution, I mean, hey, maybe the solution you find, as I said, maybe you'll consider that a favorable outcome, and maybe to me that's not a favorable outcome. But there's some guys out there, maybe they get angry at a guy because they might say, look, you did X, Y, Z. And you think, well, I just paid, you know, I paid the parking ticket. And they get angry at them. And they say, oh, you didn't have to pay that parking ticket. And the guy goes, well, you know, to me, it's a favorable outcome. I parked in the spot. They didn't want me to park there. They gave me a ticket. I paid them 60 euros. I'm happy. We have to realize that's okay, folks. We cannot impose our will on others. If the guy is happy to pay the 60 euro for a parking ticket, that's his business. If you're not, well, that's your business.
Well, I drove to Belbriggan today.
Uh-huh.
And I happened to encounter, well, I don't know if you'd say encounter, but on the way I came very close to four guards. You know, I think one in Dublin, one on the way.
Mm-hmm.
Motorcycle out in Fibsborough when I came back.
Right.
Another one someplace on the M1. So I saw four of them. And if I'd have been, you know, cutting up or, you know, doing something, you know, swerving or something with the automobile, they would have nailed me. Okay.
You weren't talking to any of these guys, no?
Pardon?
You weren't having a conversation with any of these chaps, no?
You what?
Were you talking to them?
No, no.
Oh, okay, okay.
The first one was down when I was leaving Dublin.
Right.
And then, they just came by me and was looking.
Uh-huh.
And then there was another one. There was a person going the wrong way on the, I think it was the M1. Does that sound right?
Right, that's a bad idea, going the wrong way on that road.
Yeah, no shit.
A lot of people come out of the airport, foreign, and they...
Well, I don't know what will happen.
They go tearing up the road. I've seen it. They go tearing up the road.
That was the second,
Well, and some people, they do it innocently, they come from France or Spain or somewhere, and they get off an airplane, and they get into a hire car, and they come around the roundabout at the airport, and suddenly they're on the wrong side of the road.
But no, I was just saying, on a normal day, apparently, I've run in 4 guards today, okay?
Uh-huh.
They came within, near, within a passing distance of me, okay? A car length of me, okay?
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean to say they were watching me. But had I been, appropriately my driving or something, they would have probably nailed me.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they would have noticed I came that close to them, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I'm saying.
Sure. No, I get you.
So we can't go out there and think that we can do all these, maneuvers or whatever and get, think that we should have justice or whatever.
Well, I think a lot of people have this idea. Let's take a guy who's, going real fast. And the cop thinks, well, he's going too fast. He's breaking the speed limit, whatever, and they pull him over. And he says, well, hey, there's no victim, right? There's no crime. Nobody's hurt. But he was tearing through the place, maybe he's doing
it. Yeah, he could probably, he's swished by that, okay, if he goes to court. Or whatever, or maybe he can even talk the guard out of it. I don't know. Some of them do. That persuasion.
I've seen I never saw anybody talk their way out of being arrested. If I think if the guy's going to arrest you, you're going to get arrested.
I mean, there's all kinds of things that can happen out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You can even give them 100, your driver's license. Slip 100 in there.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
500.
Well, some of those guys can take exception to that too, I'd say,
But no, I'm just saying that does happen.
Well, it's never happened with me, I can assure you.
I never could put a fiver in there, baby.
Would a 2 euro coin be any good?
But then I'd ask him if 2 euro would do it.
What about 2 cents?
Five-itis.
Five-itis, exactly.
I think we all have that problem.
Or will he take a check or a credit card?
No, this legalism and law is rather interesting. No, you were talking about the fellow speeding. Well, if he takes a citation or ticket, when it goes to court, he could probably come out of there in good standing by paying or not paying, if that's what they call it, paying or not paying.
Mm.
If there's any, you can't really pay anything, so. That's really even a misnomer when you say paying or not paying anything.
Yeah, I call it effecting payment.
Right.
It's only an effect, and they accept it as such. You give them a little piece of paper.
Call it postponement.
Yeah, some people, they see a piece of paper and it has the right scribbles and marks on it, and it makes them smile when you give it to them sometimes. You give them a wrong piece of paper and with the wrong things on it, and it doesn't make them smile.
Let's rasher to we the people in this chat box on CNS. He says something about doors. This must be this H-O. We the people. Yeah. His initials H-O.
Oh, yeah. So I see, yeah.
What's that mean, doors?
I don't know. I think he's talking to somebody else. You're back a bit on the chat.
Well, I see it at 10:38.
Yeah, we're at 10:55 now, apparently.
Okay.
You need to scroll forward.
Or I just happen to see it.
I don't know.
I thought maybe he's in the swinging doors or something.
Well,
maybe he met the Chinese proverb before he went into a door. Or, you know, through a door, okay.
Well.
Caption that was above the door.
What's this? I put it in the chat box there a while ago. Exits are on the way out.
On the way up or?
Out.
Out.
Yeah. Okay. It was a play on words, yeah. They're on the way out. As in, you know, do I mean exits are on the way out or they're on the way out?
That's a classic.
I don't know if I go that far. Mr. T,
okay. Who's this Duck Sue? Oh, no, Duck Dodgers.
Duck Dodgers, yeah. I'm going to finish up tonight, T, if that's okay with you.
Well, you're the boss.
Well, apparently. I got the big button here. I got the big red button. What I'm going to do, though, now, Wobbly sent me a little video that he wants me to play. Well, it's a YouTube clip. So I'm going to play that to finish off. I'm going to play a song first, and what I'll do is after we're done tonight, I'll do a repeat straight away, folks. So if you missed anything tonight, there'll be a repeat straight away afterwards, and I'll get the podcast up fairly soon. As always, Mr. T, it's a business doing pleasure with you, and it's a pleasure doing business with you.
Okay, I'm promptly thankful.
So we'll say goodnight for tonight. The repeat's on the way.
Four.
So anything you just want to say before you go, or are we done? Is the goose cooked?
Well, if you can't be good, be careful.
There you go. Now there, that's the sentiment to finish on. I like it. If you can't be good, be careful.